Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The news moves so quickly these days, it's easy to forget that we're still dealing with a pandemic. Business closures during stay-at-home orders were widespread, and unemployment has soared as a result. Some sectors of our economy and the workers in those sectors have been hit harder than others, but among the hardest hit has been those in the arts and entertainment sector. Even in the best of times, Charlotte's art scene balances its finances on a razor's edge. And just prior to the pandemic, local arts organizations were facing funding cuts due to dwindling support for the Arts and Science Council. But now, all of the area's theaters have gone dark. Performing arts groups, as well as individual artists, have been idled and are trying to figure out not just how to survive, but how to come back. If you barely make ends meet when the house is full, how do you stay afloat when social distancing limits capacity? The challenges are many, and in some cases as unique as the artists or the arts groups themselves. So this hour we hear from a few. Tom Gabbert is president and CEO of Blumenthal Performing Arts. That organization runs the Belk, the Knight, Booth, McLowan, and Duke Energy Theaters. They book countless musical artists and comedy acts throughout the year, bringing in the Broadway series, of course, the road tours that come through town. And they incubate a number of local artists and art groups. Tom Gabbert, welcome back.
Morning.
Morning. Linda Reynolds is managing director for the Children's Theater at Imagineon. She's responsible for strategic development, corporate giving for the organization that produces high quality programming for children and adults on two stages, provides training and classes, and sends the theater's resident touring company to schools all over the state. Thank you for being with us. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks, Mike.
Greg McCraw is owner and founder of Max Music, with two X's, by the way, the largest independent concert promotions company in the area. It produces more than 500 concerts here each year and around North Carolina as well. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. And David Daly Arrington is a Grammy-nominated producer, recording artist, and creative entrepreneur who co-founded the Fair Play Music Equity Initiative, which we'll find out about, and also an organization called Hugh House. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
If you'd like to join our conversation, you can. You can email us or get to us through Twitter or Facebook, through all the regular means, names, and addresses. Performing arts events started being canceled in March, if I recall correctly. It seems like 100 years ago now. But Blumenthal produces over hosts over 1,000 events a year on its many stages. How would you describe the impact on your organization and on the city at large of these closures and the 110 people who work for you?
Well, it's been devastating. Everything came to a complete halt for us quickly. You know, we work both with local groups as well as national touring. Everything came to a halt very, very fast. And our folks, it's our lifeblood to bring people together. And I think all of us are still reeling from just the suddenness of all of this.
Some area theaters had to stop performances of shows that were in progress. Others stopped rehearsals for shows that were about to open. They canceled summer seasons. The same, I'm sure, is true of children's theater. What has this done to you, your staff, the young people who learn from your staff, and all of the artists that you employ?
Well, I agree with Tom. It was just such an abrupt halt that I think it did send us kind of reeling. The last day we were actually in the theater was March 16th, I believe. We did have shows in rehearsal. We were still performing. So everything just sort of ground to an immediate halt. One of the things we've been able to do, though, is kind of redeploy some of the artists that we have on staff, trying not only to deal with the immediacy of the situation, but to do some planning and some experimentation for what could the future bring for different types of theater engagements.
Which we'll talk about as we go through here, because recovering from this is going to be, it's going to be a new normal, at least for a while, one would imagine. Greg, music venues are really hurting, and musicians, whether they're solo musicians or they have small bands, or whether they're the Rolling Stones, they're not performing right now, and the venues that have hosted them over the years also are not open. And one of those venues I know you book exclusively, and that is the Neighborhood Theater, and they have a unique marquee up right now dealing with COVID-19, which we can't say on the radio. What are these bands and individual musicians that you work with doing during all this? Were any of them eligible for the PPP money that came from the government?
So, yes. I mean, at the venue level, we've been able to get some, speaking for all the venues in Charlotte, to get some PPP loans, but that's mainly for the staff. I mean, I think you shouldn't, or everyone should realize that when the doors close, and ours closed March 7th, that was the last show that we had at Neighborhood Theater. We were gearing up for another show, Stephen Marley, that following weekend. We had to postpone it less than 24 hours before doors open, and we haven't opened since. So that means that our bartenders, our door staff, our security people, none of those people have worked. And at the Neighborhood Theater, that's about 25 people that work part-time and full-time. So they've had absolutely no work since March 7th.
And these people in the music business, individual musicians or small groups or duos or trios or recording artists, I suppose you can still record daily, but you certainly can't get out there and perform. These are gig workers, meaning that a lot of them don't normally qualify for unemployment, do they, daily?
In some cases, and honestly, most cases, that's correct. You don't work for an organization that's putting into the pot to apply and be able to qualify for unemployment. Thus, when things like this happen, you're just scrapped. You don't have gigs. You have gigs that are canceled for months. And pretty much you have to figure out, what am I going to do? Obviously, you either have to get another job. And honestly, I think the biggest risk during this time is the fact that we risk losing a lot of our performing artists as a result of this, because afterwards it's, hey, I'm gonna throw my hands up in the air and I'm just gonna get a regular 9-to-5. That's the easiest way to go. Thus, we lose some of the richness of our artist community.
Well, that's where I think your organization, I'm not sure, I'm not very clear on your organization, but you're gonna clear it up right now. I think that's where Fair Play Music Equity Initiative comes in. You helped launch a COVID-19 relief fund. Is that one of the goals or the missions of this organization, to keep musicians afloat?
Well, the vision of Fair Play Music Equity Initiative is a fair Charlotte music scene, where what makes us different is what makes the difference. Again, that can sound flowery, but it revolves around making sure everyone, every silo, every group of individuals within our music scene actually has what they need to support and to thrive in Charlotte. And the music fund was a part of that. Because I believe in Charlotte, as you said before, when it comes to supporting and funding our independent artists in Charlotte, we don't do a good job of that historically. Some of that is due to the systems and structures and how they've been built. But part of that, or I'll say speaking to this fund, part of our reason for it was, hey, we can't risk losing our artists. We can't risk losing our musicians, our performers. So we need to do whatever we can as quickly as we can to give them whatever support we can. Again, what we're doing now is a step in the right direction, is what I would say.
A lot of organizations, from the National Theater in Britain to Broadway.com to local performance venues, have done some streaming during all of this, streaming of shows. It's given people an opportunity to see some amazing things, if you're aware of them, online, full-fledged, fully staged productions that were recorded back in the day when you could still have people in the seats. And local artists have been doing, Theater Charlotte has been doing streaming of certain productions and specialized productions just for streaming, as have musicians. And I'm curious about one thing. Those of you who have participated or organized these streaming events, is it just to exercise your artistic chops, or can you make money from this? Are you giving it away just to keep people busy, or can you actually make money doing this? Daily, let me hear from you, and I'll go around the room here.
Yeah. So you can make money. But I would also add that sometimes value, especially during times like this, doesn't is not a money issue. It's more of a trust, it's more of a relationship building season. Again, if you're scrapped for money, that really doesn't feel good. But there are examples of musicians and artists in our city. And honestly, Tosco Music is a perfect example of being able to raise thousands of funds within a few hours via a live streamed event. So, and again, they, Tosco Music, as well as Music Everywhere Charlotte, we're the three organizations that partner to create this fund. So it is possible, but I believe some of the value that's being created during this time via streaming isn't just money, but it's also just continue to build the relationships within the community, because a lot of times the community just has no idea the richness of the art that exists here.
There've also been some YouTube productions that have been remarkable in terms of just getting old casts of people like Chorus Line together to sing one number. Every person who's ever been in a number in the history of theater was in this thing on YouTube. It's amazing. I'm not sure how they do it, but for musicians, it's one thing to act to a camera and a microphone. It's another thing to put a band in there, because that requires, I would think, some sort of technical setup. Greg, are the people, the acts that you work with, capable of doing this, or are they able to do it and still make money or not lose money on it?
Yeah, I think to reiterate, there are some artists around town who've been doing this routinely. Josh Daniel is one who I think's done quite well doing simulcast or streaming. I think what we're going to see going forward, and this is a big discussion point in the industry as a whole, when we open back up and we can only open at limited capacity, is adding a streaming component, some secondary ticket where if you can't come because we have limited capacities, or you don't feel comfortable coming, where we also stream a concert. So there's a lot of work going on right now to be able to provide that service.
I think I want to come back to that a little bit later on, because they may affect theater as well as music. And Linda, I know that I think that children's theater has been streaming some things, and I know that you're looking at virtual summer camps.
That's right. During this time, we have taken the opportunity to try to really stay engaged with the community. We don't want to just fade into the woodwork, certainly, but we had an opportunity to stream two of our previous productions, one that had been produced earlier this year that was actually part of our kindness project called The Invisible Boy. And rather than just throw it up there for viewing, we also had a chance to have the book author and illustrator and some of the cast members join live. So we sort of did a wraparound experience with the audience being able to ask questions live during the pre-show and the post-show activity. So that was a lot of fun.
Are people taking advantage of this? I know you can gauge how many people are watching a live stream. Are people, are they doing it? Are they watching?
With The Invisible Boy, we had about 700 people participating, and we did put an ask out for support since this was a free program, and we're able to raise several thousand dollars. We also did a previous production from several years ago called Journey to Oz that was an experiential theater experience and had the director involved and, again, some of the cast members. So,
Tom, I have 30 seconds. I know it's easier to do this at the local level than it is to do it with a Broadway series, because there are all kinds of performance rights issues that have to be, which cost money when you're streaming something. Is your organization doing anything like this with streaming?
We're really trying to call attention to the high quality streaming that's happening with our colleagues, both local and national, because there is some really, really good content. So we're focused on advertising that.
Tom Gabbard is the president and CEO of the Blumenthal Performing Arts Organization. We have several other guests. We'll come back and talk more about the future of the arts in Charlotte during COVID-19 in just a moment.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, along with Tom Gabbard, president and CEO of the Blumenthal Performing Arts Organization. I always want to say something else there, but I don't know why. Linda Reynolds is here. She is the managing director of Children's Theater. Greg McCraw, owner and founder of Max Music. He books music, musicians, and concerts all over the state. And David Daly Arrington, a Grammy-nominated producer, co-founder of Fair Play Music Equity Initiative, and also of something called Hugh House. And this is another organization that has also partnered, Daly, with the ASC to help creative entrepreneurs of color with free Zoom-based workshops during this COVID-19 shutdown, which have focused on helping artists understand how to pivot their work to the digital space. Talk about that. It's not always easy to do that if you've grown up on a stage.
Yeah, that's correct. Now, Fair Play is very music specific, but Hugh House is not. It's very broad, whether you're a visual artist, whether you're just a creative entrepreneur. But like you said, we very much with Hugh House are focused on the underserved artists and creative entrepreneur community in our city, which is the Black community, the communities of color. So with the ASC, we're doing a series of four workshops. The first one did speak to, again, how do you pivot during COVID-19 and utilize the internet to, one, gain new clients through platforms like Fiverr or Upwork, where, again, people are looking for work, but you need to know where to find it. So being able to set up accounts there, but also how to honestly collaborate with others using the internet, whether it looks like, okay, you as a visual artist collaborating with a fashion designer and having them use your art in their fashion. And just, again, how do you get out of the norm and start to expand what you see your art can be used.
Does this seem to work better for certain artists, individuals who seem to be, more technically savvy, or does it also, is it dependent on the art form? Is it dependent on the target audience of that art form as to how well this works?
I think all of those variables play into it, but I would say that for myself, my career has been in web design. So when it comes to, again, jobs online, typically the tech industry, whether it's web design, also, I mean, there's a lot of need for graphic design, but also on these platforms, you can do voice work as well. So, Mike, you would be able to get a job on Upwork if you wanted one.
Thank you.
So, again, it goes into performing artists as well. If you have a great voice, there are people out there looking for voiceover work as well as for animation and things of that nature. But it's all about, again, getting onto these platforms, building your brand and building relationships. And a lot of times artists just don't know. They just know, okay, let me get into a gallery. They don't know what's available to them online. So that one workshop was very much focused on awareness that these things exist, as well as getting out of the typical box of, oh, I only do concerts like this. It's like, okay, the internet.
Let me take a moment here and write that down, because I may need some work soon. Up work. Okay, Tom, Broadway has done something that I don't think has ever been done before, at least not for the period of time that they're doing it, and that is shutting everything down. There are no shows running in New York at all. And one show that we know of, at least, Disney's Frozen, has already said it's not coming back once this is over. They're closing that show permanently. I'm sure this has also thrown a wrench into the works of a lot of touring companies, some that were in rehearsal ready to come out for the fall and winter season, others in casting, some maybe on the road already. What has this meant for you and other producers and presenters around the country who have to plan not only for what's happening right now, but have to plan for what's going to happen, we hope, in September, October, January, March, whatever?
Yeah, it is a real challenge. all these shows are stopped. We're hoping to see Broadway come back in the late fall. It could be even in the spring. The road is actually likely to come back sooner. And I'm very much in the weeds with looking to bring back touring Broadway. I think the health issues that we need to safely deal with are real, and figuring out plans to safely reopen these facilities. And I think there are ways for us to do it, but it's a hard thing to figure out because there are really no models for us to pursue. And it's not just a question of safely reopening them for the public, but for performers as well. Performers need to feel that when they walk through that that stage door, that it's safe for them. And for touring companies, you know, that issue ramps up even further because the travel that's involved, the hotels that they are at, we have to figure out comprehensive solutions so that artists feel safe.
Wow. We're going to talk more about that, too, because I don't think people understand that. I mean, TV has stopped production. And when they're trying to figure out a way to come back, because how do you do two-person scenes? Can an actor kiss another actor? Can an actor sing toward another actor? Because singing causes droplets to come out. How do you do? The actors can't wear masks. They have to be unmasked on the stage. Linda, I know you want to jump in here.
Well, yes, I was just going to say, you know, certainly the things that Tom has addressed are prevalent in the industry, but children's theater is a producing theater, which has an entirely different set of things for us to consider. It's certainly our public audiences. Do they feel safe coming in? And we're part of the National Theater for Young Audiences survey that is going to be tracked over the next 5 months that Wolf Brown is helping with to try to determine what's the propensity of people's willingness to return. But it is also about cast and crew. It's things like costume fittings. How do you do that? How do you handle quick changes during a production? How do you hang scenery and lights when it takes two or three people close together to do those sorts of things? And then certainly Tom and I both will be dealing with front of house issues, your ticketing, your ushers, and just making people feel that being back in a theater is where they want to be right now.
Yeah, Greg, I know that you have put out, I think, a survey, and I've gotten about 800 responses from concert goers, music venue goers. What are they telling you about what they want those experiences to be like when everything comes back or starts coming back?
We haven't crunched all the data. We started this just yesterday, so one of the things that's come out of the pandemic is, so in Charlotte, there are 23 independent music venues ranging from about 100 capacity up to the Neighborhood Theater, which is almost 1,000. And we've joined together as an alliance, the Charlotte Independent Venue Alliance. And this all with the help of Center City Partners. We've done this in the last couple of weeks. And we started a survey yesterday asking people their opinions of what they would like to see, how comfortable they are coming back out. And yeah, we've had 800 responses in about 12 hours. Hmm. So we're going to let the survey run through middle of next week. If anyone wants to participate, you can look at any of the independent venues on their Facebook page if you weren't on a mailing list already, and you can participate and give us your opinions.
Of course, everybody's making this up as they go along because we have never experienced this before. And Eric on Facebook writes, please mention the stage management and workers that have lost their opportunity to work. There are many times there are more people behind the scenes running the show than there are on the stage. You have no idea how many people it takes to put something up on its feet and open and raise the curtain. This was one of the first businesses hit, Eric writes, and will be one of the last to come back. I am a touring production manager for a show worldwide. My tours were canceled at the beginning of March, and because of the planning that goes into a tour, they will not come back for some time to come. A tour can take about 6 months to plan in advance, and with our uncertainty, the producers are hesitant to begin planning. On some shows, there are touring crews of 20 and 30 people, but we also employ upwards of 100 local people in every city we bring a show. So, Tom, economists are talking about hoping for, although they're becoming less optimistic about, a V-shaped recovery, where, yet we go down when we close everything for COVID-19, but as soon as we open the doors, everything goes back to normal. That doesn't appear to be what's going to happen, but that's what they're hoping for. Do you see a V-shaped recovery in terms of how quickly shows come back and can be produced and put on a stage, and how quickly audiences will come back to see them?
It's certainly, when it comes to the shows coming back, there's not going to be anything like that. And this writer who points out the planning time that's necessary, that's a huge thing. And you know, and right now with the legal situation we're in, where we only can bring together 10 people indoors and 25 outdoors, it even constrains our short-term planning to figure out what can we do to begin to restart. But the planning issues are real. It's also why Broadway is going to come back far slower than we will on the road. Right now, for any Broadway show, there literally is no Broadway show that has any advanced ticket sales beyond September 1 besides Hamilton. Hmm. So once we legally can reopen, these shows have to start from dollar zero. And they're reliant on a tourism economy that's going to come back slowly in New York. So the mountain is very high for New York. But here, you know, I think we are reliant on a whole network of artists, not just on the Broadway side, but the concert side, where the planning issues are real. And until we can really satisfy the safety concerns of not just the artists, but the touring companies, you know, the support staff, we have to satisfy them that it's safe, and then go to the hard work of actually creating a tour route.
Greg, is it somehow easier for musicians to come back from this closure, or are the concerns exactly the same as theatrical productions?
I think they're exactly the same. And I've compared this, you know, when restaurants started to reopen, they basically had to go to their refrigerators, make sure they had food, and they could open the next day or within a few days. Even if we were allowed to reopen tomorrow, our product isn't there. We don't have national touring acts that are out on the road right now. Mm-hmm. And until they can plan a tour that will take them from Atlanta to Charlotte to New York to DC, they can't go back out on the road just for a one-night show in Charlotte. So it's exactly the same. You know, even when we're allowed to reopen, we clearly have the safety concerns. And those artists have safety concerns as well. Are they all going to travel in a bus together, a van together? But there's going to be a fairly long lag before we have product to put on our stages.
Daily.
Yeah. So, I mean, definitely agree. And Greg would know better than I would when it comes to tours and things of that nature. But I want to see the opportunity in this, and I see this as an opportunity to dive deep within our own community when it comes to talent, when it comes to performers, when it comes to bands. This is an opportunity where we can really, as a music community, become more close, I mean, tighten it and actually put to use the value we have within our community. Because I believe we all obviously are longing for some human interaction. And even if it is at a much limited rate of people, this is a time where we can utilize the value we have in our own community. And sometimes I think the music community feels as if Charlotte values those who will travel from other cities and states to perform, then we value our own artists and performers. So this is a time we could leverage to invest in ourselves.
Can this be a time when also creative artists, individual songwriters, singers, etc., should they be using, and are they using this time as a time to create, to incubate their work, to think about their work, to grow their work, so that when they come back, oh my gosh, we're better than ever?
Yeah, I agree. Yes, this is a time where this should be happening. And again, if you want to look at history, a lot of great music comes out of times like COVID-19. A lot of great music comes out of, again, you know, hard moments like George Floyd and everything that's going on right now. This is where a lot of our meaningful and beautiful music comes from. And I think us as artists, we should be, if anything, pushing harder on the gas than anything. But I would say, again, when it comes to the support that independent artists receive in Charlotte, that is something that, again, we have the opportunity to improve on right now.
Linda, I know you wanted to comment just before I asked Daly that second question. Go ahead.
You know, this whole situation has certainly been a test of resiliency for organizations, and will continue to be. We tend to plan 18 months to 2 years out with our productions, but we have learned to pivot. You know, we've had to make some substantial changes in how we plan to move forward. We were going to open in September with the big musical Annie. That won't happen, obviously. And much of it has to do with the fact that we're serving schools as well as public audiences. So, you know, we won't be doing musicals this year. We won't be doing two-act plays with intermissions because all the little kids have to go to the bathroom. We won't be selling concessions when we reopen. We may not have two show days to ensure that we can thoroughly have the theater cleaned between performances. We're going to be selling general admission tickets so that we can expand and contract the number of people that can be in our theaters from a socially distanced standpoint, with the hope that everybody, you know, that things will improve as the season goes along.
Well, that you bring up some things that everybody in this on this program right now has to be concerned about when things come back, and that is if you have to socially distance in an auditorium that seats anywhere from 500 to 2,500, and you want 6 feet of separation, that means empty rows. It means separation between adjacent seats. It means not being able to sell every ticket in the house. And right now, I would think from the Broadway series right down to the Children's Theater and Theater Charlotte and Actors Theater and the music venues, if you can't fill the house, you can barely make money when you do. So how can you do what you do if you can't fill the house, Linda?
It's going to be a huge challenge. I mean, we're deep in the middle of budget planning for next year, and it's very treacherous right now. Yeah. The one thing we don't feel like we can do is throw up our hands and go away. That's, again, not the type of organization we are. We're rooted in serving our community from a public standpoint, as well as schools, with our touring company. We're not going down without a fight.
Greg, same question. I mean, neighborhood theater, I don't think it has seats. I think it's just a slanted floor toward the stage. But if you can't fill it, if you can't sell as many tickets as you normally would, how can you pay the people on the stage and the people behind the stage?
Yeah, it impacts the entire economy. I mean, we can seat the theater, but it's normally a standing room venue. Yeah, if we can't sell all the tickets, this is a low margin business anyway, and we depend on concessions. We depend on people drinking at the bar. So everyone is impacted. The deals with artists are going to be different going forward.
And the deals with Broadway touring companies, when we come back, we're going to talk with Tom Gabbard about that, because there's a certain nut that has to be reached, or it doesn't work economically. We'll come back and talk more about the future of arts in Charlotte during COVID-19 in just a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about how performing arts comes back as things begin to reopen following the COVID-19 shutdown. We're doing this with David Daly Arrington, who is a Grammy-nominated producer and co-founder of Fair Play Music Equity Initiative and Hugh House. Greg McCraw is the owner and founder of Max Music. They book music acts all over the state, and they are, I believe, the exclusive booker for the Neighborhood Theater in NoDa. Linda Reynolds is managing director of the Children's Theater, and Tom Gabbard is president and CEO of Blumenthal Performing Arts. So, Tom, you deal with these Broadway tours that cost the Blumenthal a lot of money to bring in, And if you can't sell the house, how do you make it work? Are producers willing to take less because you have to socially distance? Is that a subject that has even been broached? And I believe you're muted, so you have to unmute yourself. There we go.
So social distancing for the Broadway shows, as well as a lot of concerts, is not a viable option. And so that's why I'm working with a few folks to pursue what are the approaches that may be possible. And in fact, one that we're hopeful of trying here comes from Seoul, Korea. Interestingly, the big musicals like Phantom of the Opera and others like it in Seoul, Korea, never stop playing. And they've faced this virus crisis before we did, and faced it in a very big way at the outset. So we have very carefully studied that model. Phantom, in particular, plays without any capacity limitation. They can't seat in the first row, but beyond that, they can seat everywhere else. And so we are looking carefully to see how we can introduce at least elements of that mode to get us close to full capacity, because so long as we don't have a way to, you know, get close to full capacity, shows literally will not happen. Yeah.
So how are they accomplishing that in Korea?
A couple of things. First of all, universal masking is the foundation that this is built on. Everybody has to wear a mask. That includes people backstage. That includes people in the orchestra pit, except for the wind players. They do a pre-show questionnaire. There are hand sanitizing stations every 5 to 10 feet.
Including the house, including the auditorium.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Including the house, the venue has a medical grade cleaning a couple of times a week. But again, the masking is the foundation this is built on, and the ushers even are in the aisles with laser pointers to point out people if they slip on that. And so, you know, to some degree, I think people need to look at this as just part of the change of how we do business. I've analogized it to my staff as when I moved from California to places that had cold weather. And I said, you know, I had to change up my wardrobe. I had to get some different tires on my car. I had to learn to drive differently. And I think that's what's ahead for us in some respects, is we're going to have to change up how we do business, and we have to do it in a way that doesn't diminish the experience for people, that still keeps it fun, that still keeps it uplifting. But there are going to have to be changes if we're going to reopen these venues.
In Charlotte, Blumenthal, Bojangles Entertainment Complex, Charlotte Metro Credit Union Amphitheater, Live Nation Carolinas, PNC Music Pavilion, and the Spectrum Center are all teaming up, Greg, with venues around the state in a group called NC Live to talk about how they will handle this reopening. Are you part of that?
Am I, Greg, part of that?
Yes. Yes.
No, I'm not, but Tom and I have a conversation about once a week now. And I mentioned before, we formed in Charlotte SIVA, which is all of the independent venues. And so we're talking back and forth about what we're doing as well. There's also among independent music venues, a new organization called NIVA, the National Independent Venue Association. And there's a lot of discussion nationally about how to reopen.
Daily.
Mike, can I say, because sure. NC Live, I'm actually co-chair of that group, and I just want to say, because the governor's been in the news of late about these venues, we have found the governor's office to be really wonderful in trying to figure this out, to try to figure out how to get these venues open, but to do it safely. So it's part of why I'm cautiously optimistic that given a little time, we'll figure out those protocols to get them reopened.
I hate to tell you this, Greg, but Laura on Twitter writes, my daughter just lost her job as a digital marketer for a big music corporation, and they don't think concerts are coming back anytime soon. Do you share that pessimistic attitude there?
No, I'm actually optimistic. Okay. I don't know when we'll be able to come back. And we're fairly stubborn too as independent music venues owners and operators. So I think we're all optimistic and we plan to come back.
Daily, we've been talking a lot on this program and other programs as well about the out of balance impact, let's put it that way, that COVID-19 has had on the Black community, African and minorities at large. The Latinx community has suffered greatly from this. I would guess that this also transfers to music and arts produced by people of color.
That is a great guess, Mike. Good job. I've been asked before about that. And again, if you're not a part of the community, you think it's siloed. Oh, there's the Black community, then there's the Black music community. It's like, no, if you're Black, you're Black, regardless of where you sit within the community. So that is correct. When it comes to, again, we can't, again, what's happening as a response to George Floyd's death and others is not something that voila appeared. It's something that's been historic. And when it comes to underserved communities, unsupported communities, this is continuing to take effect in, again, COVID-19 cases, as well as when it comes to, you know, COVID relief, when it comes to these communities as well. So very much it's hitting the communities of color just in a different way, and in a imbalanced way, as you said. So, and we're trying to do our best with the music fund to do what we can to make sure communities know, because a lot of times it's just because of a disconnect. They're not connected to these platforms. They're not, you know, paying attention to these websites in the same way that other communities are. So we're trying our best to make sure information reaches the community where they are in an equitable manner. But yes, that's correct. It's just a different impact from COVID to just the impact on artists and creatives of color.
When times were good, when the economy was roaring and all of your organizations were staging things and producing things, and the audiences were sitting out there in the seats and they were full at capacity at very expensive prices, it was pointed out that more people go to and spend money on concerts and plays and other artistic endeavors than go to football games and basketball games and hockey games combined. The money here is astronomical. Shutting down Broadway is astronomical in terms of what it's doing to New York and all the people involved in producing and performing. The Charlotte Symphony has said it expected to lose more than $1 million in lost ticket sales. Opera Carolina stands to lose about $130,000, and that's just for one opera that was on the schedule. Tosco Music says they will lose nearly $250,000, half of their annual budget, due to COVID-19. And across the state, arts groups have reported losing $8.1 million just 1 month into this. These are figures from March, April. We're now into June here. The Blumenthal, Tom, I'm told, is losing $1 million a month. Maybe the Blumenthal can absorb this, I don't know. But these smaller groups, can they? How do you come back from this? How do you stay alive? How do you recover from the economic crisis that you're going through? Tom and Linda, I want to hear from Tom. Start.
Yeah, first of all, let me point out that the dollars, the ripple effect, you know, to other businesses that rely on us, restaurants, hotels, and all of that, that is huge. And so the loss and the pain to individuals extends well beyond us. But yeah, I think that issue of the burn rate for groups, especially groups that are very undercapitalized. Many of us, you know, were lucky to get PPP loans that helped us for 2 months. But the longer this goes on, the more likely it is that it'll exceed the capacity of groups to sit this out. And ultimately, it's a human impact on people that are employed, artists that are employed, and their families.
Linda, Children's Theaters, I'm totally ignorant, so just take this with a grain of salt. Some of your audiences are built in because you perform for school field trip groups that come into the theater and see your shows, and your touring company tours schools all over the state, and that money is built in. Maybe your situation is different from other performing groups. Is it? Can you survive losing all this money month after month after month?
Well, again, Mike, it's a really treacherous thing. And by having diversified audiences between schools and public, that would seem to be a benefit. But we look at all the situations that schools are in right now. What's it going to be like when school goes back? You know, I just was reading this morning that on buses, the expectation from the governor's office is that children will be socially distanced on buses. Right now, we have issues with schools who can't get bus transportation to get to a field trip anyway because of school schedules. So that is going to wreak absolute havoc with schedules next year. With touring, going into schools around the Carolinas, we don't know if schools will allow assemblies. Will they allow classes to come together? Certainly, again, for field trips, will one school be willing to come in and sit next to another school, or will they want to be segmented? So just a lot of questions out there that we're trying to deal with. But I'll tell you this, you know, some recent studies say that 72% of Americans attend cultural events. And as been pointed out, people spend additional money when they over and above their ticket cost when they do that. So, you know, arts and culture and history and science is a viable industry. It's one that's in demand, and we need to continue to figure out ways that we can supply that product for a lot of.
Tom?
Mike, let me add, you know, a lot of this discussion has been focused on our interior venues. And let me say, I think part of the reemergence here that we're going to see is going to focus on outside. And so I think people, there is hope out there. I don't want people to leave feeling like this is an unwinnable disaster. But I think the things that we'll see first are performances that are outside. And particularly for our local artists, I think this could be an incredible opportunity for us to be able to re-engage performance activity, but on a foundation of local artists who are here, that don't have to get in a bus, that don't have to travel. But I do think the public should expect to see activity outside first, and then, you know, more and more activity inside.
Okay, and by outside you mean outdoors. Daily, this folds into something that you wanted to talk about, and that's local artists and getting them back on stages when those stages become available. Do you see this as an opportunity for local artists to literally take the stage front and center because of the lack of touring companies and touring bands?
Absolutely, and it's, I mean, no shot to Tom and Blumenthal, but you're a mammoth of a beast, you know what I mean? And it's going, you're taking a hit, a serious hit. And again, the degree may be the same, but the amount of funds that you're losing, as well as what it's going to take to rebound, is totally different from an independent artist. And as it's been referred to, alternative venues, I believe, is going to be the solution, whether that's someone's home in the backyard, or whether that's, you know, in a park, you know what I mean, a small group of people. We're going to have to utilize those type of strategies to be able to rebound. And again, in the midst of doing that, and I think the larger organizations like the Blumenthal, like Max Music, it's to their advantage to partner with those independent artists to do these things and honestly create a new model that, you know, is not just something we can use during COVID, but honestly that can continue to be used beyond COVID, which I believe is, again, going to strengthen the fabric of who we are as an arts and music community outside of, again, the shiny big organizations.
Let's hope for a warm fall and winter then, if we have to watch performances outdoors. Greg, very quickly, because I'm very short on time. I got about 30 seconds here. I know the Neighborhood Theater has launched a campaign to save itself monetarily because it's cost about $50,000 a month in rent and there's no revenue coming in. How many other venues are at risk here during this crisis in about 20 seconds?
Sure. Across the country, NEVA estimates that over 1,000 independent venues could close by the end of the year without help. Locally, Neighborhood Theater has a GoFundMe. I know the Visualite has one. So, yeah, pay attention to your local venues because they are struggling.
Keep our fingers crossed. Tom Gabbard from Blumenthal Performing Arts, Linda Reynolds from the Children's Theater, Greg McCraw, owner and founder of Max Music, and Daley Arrington, a Grammy-nominated producer, co-founder of Fair Play Music Equity Initiative, and Hugh House. Thank you all for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.